episode of Conversation is supported by the generous donations of Creative Lisa and Anonymous. You can support us too at truthmeets.com. Click on the donate link. truthmeets.com. Click on the donate link.
Good evening, good morning, good whatever, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, etc. You're on the Bongversations number, let me think, it's number 13. Episode 13, which is number four in the series. Well, another series, we've moved on, we're in the movie, the illusion era of the movies. That ties into
the four, right? Doesn't it? Just another door, just another way in to look at the same thing. Because it's really just going to wind up being the same thing. But go ahead.
Continue. Well, on this, it's the November the 3rd, which is 11-3 for me, and it's probably 2-11 for Joe.
11-2, 2024.
So let's just go, man. That's Dave. Blind us with your light and show us some.
Well, I was thinking.
Tell us.
I was thinking about going to. Well, I was telling you earlier. We were just kind of talking about the Malibu Creek State Park. That is in California. That is Southern California, just outside of a place I used to. The closest little town is Calabasas. By road. But it's very close to Agoura Hills, which is where I grew up. And my mother particularly would take me there, and we'd walk around the different sets. At the time, there was the Planet of the Apes set. So where they had the scene with the damn dirty apes. Get your hands off me, you damn dirty apes.
And dirty apes. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, that
Charlton Heston.
Yeah. Charlton Heston in the first one. And you know, he was in the second one, but reluctantly, and I'll get there in a minute. But okay. So that scene was filmed right there. I walked around there in my Levi's jacket being cool. And I thought I was catching the owl, man. I'm walking around there looking cool. And I even walked up the steps, you know, where they had like the little, the gorilla was having the speech about conquest or invasion. So I sat on those steps as well. Yeah, so I did the whole little. I looked all around there. So then, just to close the loop on that deal, Charlton Heston didn't want to be part of another remake.
Ike movie.
So then he kind of, once he saw that it was going to go anyway without him, because he wasn't as powerful as he thought he was. That the movie was going to be made anyway, and it was with what's his nuts, the second guy,
Roddy McDowell
as Brent. No, James Franciscus.
James Franciscus
as Brent.
Yes.
Remember, it was in the second movie, the second pilot that landed, and then they had like 2 or 3 minutes of the skipper. Todd Andrews, where it was just a complete waste of time, where he's just laying there blind, being worthless, and just, you know, complaining that, oh, my wife's been dead for 200 years. And then he just croaks. I was like, that's two, three minutes that they could have saved. That scene didn't even have to happen. Just cut him out completely. So anyways, so then Brent. So the reason that Heston, once he saw that it was going to be made anyway, And that a lot of the same characters like Nova came back, and she was the eye candy for the whole thing anyway. Linda Harrison, yeah. So she was the eye candy for the whole thing, and Nova being a new beginning idea. And then, yep. of course, as he said, once he saw the commercial impact of the first one, he was yep. first saying that he didn't want it to be ruined, but he saw it was going to go on anyway. So then he became part of it towards at the end. You see him in the fighting scene in the cage when they're forced to fight each other through mental telepathy. That whole scene and every scene he's in is in a very tight set. So it was only he was not like the main character where he was all over the place. You know, he was in the Malibu Creek State Park. He was in Utah. He was in Arizona. He was in all those other places filming. So then Charlton just kind of came at the end and just to be part of it.
Probably paid a large amount of money to appear in as well.
And McDowell is the one who became really the character that ran through all of them.
And McDowell. The TV show eventually. Yeah. Roddy McDowell.
Yeah. So he knew a cash cow when he saw it for sure, man. Yeah. So then that's one of the sets. And then I was also on the MASH set. I ran up and down, you know, where they had the helicopter landed and things like that. I was all running up and down there. I used to be a track star. So I was running up there like as fast as I could, like they do at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
You know, with that same Levi's jacket.
Or a Hawaiian shirt. I was like,
at the beginning there with the Hawaiian shirts and in the movie specifically. And then they brought it back in the, once in a while in the show as well. Right.
Mm-hmm.
When they were knocking golf balls.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah.
Great show up, too.
Yeah. Up on Great top show. Of there. Yeah. And then they left all the tents up. If you got there before they broke it down for the season, the tents would still be up. Where Radar and the hospital was, that kind of steel building, that was always there, no matter what. Mm. That was always
and Dave,
that was
and yeah. Dave, you of course know the 4077th. What does that add up to? There's a number there. The 18, the number nine.
Yeah, so I was, and then the guy, and so with the, so with those, the Planet of the Apes, I did the MASH. Oh, and Logan's Run was also filmed out there, and that's kind of where I'd like to go ahead and start with Logan's Run.
Go for it, man. I love that TV show and the movie. Big fan. Mm.
Yeah, so if you remember, Logan went by he was a Sandman, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So now if you know the idea of a Sandman is one who is going to cause a dream or cause someone to dream, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then so then the idea of the Sandman also is to put one to sleep. So then there's a DC comic called the Sandman. And within the universe, there's Cain and Abel are characters. So you see how this ties into this idea. It always ties back to the biblical ideas. So then Logan is he calls himself Logan 5, right? That's his identity. And then his buddy is Francis 7.
Yeah.
The guy, he's a real fruitcake. Remember how he's always trying to play grab ass with him? At the beginning, he's like, you think you're a little 7. Obviously, I don't need to repeat the 7, right? 7, 7, 7, 7. So then that's the idea. So then he is, if you recall, he's the character that's chasing him the entire time, even to the end. Even to the end, his mind was not changed, even to the end. So he was that splinter that was never going to go away. So then, just to get kind of to the end of that movie, because a lot of it is, if you notice at the, I did want to kind of get to the point of it, I guess, is like, what was the key what was the key used in the movie? It was the shape or the ankh, the medallion called the ankh, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Okay. So now if you can picture the ankh in your eye, that is nothing more than the idea of the Egyptian, goddess of Nut reflected. Nut is the one who overarchs over the so-called, universe and creates a kind of a carpet above. Mm-hmm. With her arms outstretched. Also, yep. Nut in the Jewish gematria is 340, which is seven, but also equals the image of Satan. It also in English, wait for this, equals 666.
Well, there you go.
And in simple, it equals 111 or three, which you know is the ring or the false ring or the G, which is in Masonic art, you see the G, and then everywhere. The three is the G, is the seven, because in the Phoenician writing, which is the Phoenician is the idea of the merchant. It is the idea of the modern day kind of Hollywood Jew. All right. That the Jew that calls themselves Jews, but are not that kind of biblical revelation idea. All right. So the interloper. All right. So then these are the image of Satan. So these characters are putting into these movies these ideas, and they are all going to be from the Kabbalah or Kabbalistic ideas, because they are all what's called Kabbalistic Jews or Ashkenazi Jews. Notice that with the Phoenician, which is that idea. It's important that if you look at the third letter of Phoenician, it represents what looks like the seven. I've told you that before. It looks like the seven, or the seventh letter in English is the G. Now, remember, I've told you before that if you're going to deal with like the language we're using together, you and I are speaking together, we're speaking English. So then when we communicate together, I'm going to break it down into English for you. So then the mm-hmm. Nut in simple gematria, just using the N is 14, the U is the 21st letter, and the T is the 20th, you get 55. That's the balance, the 5-5, the 10. With you balance, your five senses are balanced, then you're in balance with yourself. So you see that what the Nut represents is the idea of balance. Boom, you have it. So Logan's run is running to find balance, right? Isn't that what his story is? There's something missing. So they're going to chase it. And then the key that's used is the ankh. Now this ankh, as I've just demonstrated, is the Nut, is the senses that went. Guess what happens when they first, before they can even use it, they get tempted. What's that last room temptation? And this was kind of interesting as a kid. This was a PG movie. So you got to get in to see this.
Jenny, but I got time.
Yeah, so you get through this first door, and it's basically the last temptation scene. It's a bunch of naked people trying to grab at you, and it's freaking, you know, it's that last final temptation, and then you get through a door, and then you're able to use this key. Now, the key is not used, and most people won't get past that room of temptation. It's too much for most. And remember, I told you that if you're dealing with the idea of particularly shrooms and whatnot, you'll come to a veil, what looks very similar. And this is, I don't think I've told you this before. It looks very similar to a stained glass window. You've got to walk past that as if it's not there. And what I find interesting with cathedrals and churches is that the stained glass is not to keep anything out, but to keep people in. Keep their spirit in. It's to keep it inside that capsule and just listen to that voice that's droning on, you know, endlessly about nonsense, right? Do you kind of get the drift? So unless you get past that veil, in the case of Logan's Run, if the characters didn't get past that room, which is earthly temptations, like the absolute all, you know, phys- earth, you know, fleshly lust, If you got past that, then you actually got the chance to move out. But do you remember that even that was a hoax because the robot character would then try and freeze you?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. So it's like you had to, it's like just when you thought you got out, you didn't get out. Then the next thing's trying to get you. And then finally what happens is they then go and they enter the sun, or they see the sun. That goes back to the book of Adam and Eve. That goes back to that biblical story of the idea of the day being created for Adam and Eve. And then when the first time that Adam sees the sun, he starts wigging out.
Yeah.
If you need to, just read the story if people need to see it.
Well, it's very similar to the fact that it's a male and female walk going through these temptations. It's very similar to an Adam and Eve story anyway. Right. Yeah, Logan, Adam.
Yeah, very good, Rick. Yeah, so just riff on anything you want to riff on, man.
Oh, man, I saw the movie. Yeah, you're right. For it was PG, I would have been 74, 75, 76, I guess it came out. And, yeah, there was plenty of bodies. You know, you got to see...
Oh, yeah, it came out in 76.
76, okay. So I'll be old enough to see it at 76. And getting to that age, I was 12, I guess, and seeing Jenny Agata and her body again and all the art. There was a lot of nudity in a movie that was, very PG for sure. A fascinating movie, though, about... So you had all the pleasures of everything given to you, but you had to... At 30, you were gone.
At 30,
you were
terminated. Croaked, yeah.
You croaked, you went, yeah. And
yeah, you went you went into the carousel.
Yeah, carousel, yeah.
Yeah, you got lifted up, and then it was supposed to be that you were then reborn and whatnot.
Well, you floated around into the sky, and it was,
And then popped.
And pop, 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 pop. Yeah. And then, so there was a bit of it was a great life up until you were 30 and then forget about it. But that's the number three. So obviously there was this beginning of you're saying the count.
And I found this interesting is that when you look at the time frame of, and I'm just looking at movies that were kind of filmed in the same area or use that same creek bed, because they would have used Malibu Creek State Park when they were, after they had gotten out and they saw the sun and then they were walking in the creek bed with all those kind of rocks, those round rocks. That's the creek bed. That's kind of the look that's of that particular area.
It's incredible how much the location, how much it's been used for these very important movies and TV shows. They picked the right location. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But, well, like I say, every time you go around a corner, because it kind of runs in an odd direction, it's in a cleft of the mountains and the oceans on the other side. So it has a very unique environment. And so it kind of gives a very interesting, every time you turn around through one of the little, crevices, it changes. So then if you look at the Planet of the Apes, they land in 2673. All right. And then the year of Logan's run is 2274. So I'm then, if you're looking at it, if we were going to go ahead and build a timeline or build fan fiction, Logan's Run would be the civilization that's about to be built after the second destruction of mankind. Because if you look at Logan's Run, they already were building upon a broken society. Because if you remember, they ran into the character in the so-called Capitol building, and that obvious Satan character, the old man.
Yeah.
Obvious Satan character. Because, and what the reason I say that is because he started to, locks became, the playing with hair, like, the idea of a character playing with one's hair is the idea of playing with a lock of hair.
Lock of hair, yeah.
Yeah, so now a lock is the idea of being locked into the idea. So what happened was is they brought the old man all the way back to this so-called dystopian place where there was no issue, at least that if you're looking at it, you know, other than the whole 30 years thing. Oh, before I can forget this, remember in their hand, they had a crystal. And then at the 30 years, it becomes like a red or a ruby color.
Yeah, it started. That's right. It started glowing.
Yeah, but just remember that. Just kind of keep the ruby color in mind, because that's going to become important when I tell you about kind of some stuff in the Planet of the Apes as well.
Excellent.
Oh, yeah.
No one's done any of this, but this is all. I've listened to all this stuff. No one's broken these shows down like what's being broken down here now. Guaranteed.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, all amateurs. They're strictly amateurs. Yeah. So then I'm looking. So the reason I saw that though is because if you notice at the end of Logan's run, all of the young people come running out and they flock down to the old man.
Yeah.
And then they destroy from behind them what they had. Their comforts they had are all destroyed. So now then what happens is the old man becomes the root of the new society, obviously. I mean, if you follow logic, because he was the one with all the books, and because all these other people knew were pleasure and pain, because some were Sandman and the others were, you know, on the circuit. Remember if you would jump on the circuit and then like the main character, Logan, the one who played the Logan 5, you could tell he was a bit of a fruitcake, Michael York. If you remember, like when he's back at his pad, like after his daily duties as a Sandman, he's relaxed, and then all of a sudden he issues orders for the circuit, which is to kind of bring a person to you that who's put themselves onto the circuit, and then it's a dude. And he's looking at him. He's like, he doesn't give him like this, like, no, get out of here, man. He's like, oh, I wish I could, but I'm doing a movie next. I wasn't really convinced with the look.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. You're right there. I do recall that now. Yeah.
It was funny.
Very effeminate. Michael York is definitely what we call a masculine actor. He's very English and clipped.
Right.
Quite effeminate, really, I guess.
Yeah. So then, what were we talking about? We took the
The ruby, and the hands.
Oh, well, yeah. Keep that in mind.
Keep that in mind,
because we got to head over to the battle. So, anyways, this thing ends. Just know the old man is basically who is this obvious Satan character is going to then repopulate, not necessarily through whatever, but just through the ideas he puts out, which are going to be a continuation of the same. All right. Yeah. So then if you move forward in the timeline, all right, to let's say 2673, that's when the Planet of the Apes actually takes place. So that's when the first craft lands in the lakes up there by Lake Powell, or at least that area. All right. So then now you're looking at whatever that society that was built destroyed itself. Yeah. I mean, you kind of already know that, but then now you're coming into the apes being put into the timeline, just if you're kind of being, you know, super geeky about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then the Planet of the Apes, remember, if you jump all the way to the end, because you already kind of know the story, it's this, that, and the other thing. But if you jump all the way to the end of the second part, beneath where they finally see, you know, the underground, which is New York, and it's all melted, and what looks like a bullet is supposed to be a nuclear bomb, which both movies, by the way, were really pushing this nuke bomb idea. And so then what happens is when they blow that up, the character of Charlton Heston, he presses the ruby or the red. It's a ruby color, or it's actually ruby in the script. It's mentioned as being ruby.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. So then, it's pressed. And of course, at the end, it says, and the sound had receded into infinite silence. The screen is blank, white, and glaring. This is like from this is, and then if you go to the 109th page, so 109, we talked about the 19 code before, there's silence, and then the audience or the hold is the silence is held for a moment, and then there is no end titles. There's nothing more. The film itself, destroyed by the atomic catastrophe, is over.
Yep.
And then it fades out. So then that's done. So over, kaput. So then that's why the other movies had to come up with a gimmick, you know, to kind of bring themselves back before that time. So you see that this is specifically talking about, and this was rewritten and revised officially on April 18th of 1969, which I find interesting. Yeah. And that happens on, and that happens on the 109th page. And I told you about that 19 code, that metonic cycle, and also the ruby, or the idea of wanting, you know, there's no place like home. That idea, the ruby slipper.
Yeah, exactly. It goes straight to the Wizard of Oz. Yeah. Yep. Gotcha. I figured that was going to be part of as soon as you mentioned ruby.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have the Wizard of Oz, and you have the idea of slippers, or the idea of slipper shoes, like moccasins. Now think about this, because the Malibu Creek State Park was supposed to have been the home of the Chumash. Chumash, Chumash Indians. Now keep this in mind, that's a bunch of horseshit. There's no such group of Indians called the Chumash. The Chumash is literally the Hebrew word for the five books, you know, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. It's called the Chumash.
Really?
So it's hidden, right? They made up some BS. They make up some BS Indian story just to hide the fact that they are saying Chumash. So this place that we're speaking about, that's housing all these movies, that's birthing all these movies on the 34th parallel north, is named after the first five books of their so-called Bible, the Chumash.
Fascinating.
Yeah, and notice that MASH is, if you take MASH apart, that's part of the MASH 4-7-7. But then you also have the idea of, within that word, MASH is sham. Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. So the sham's right. The sham's in the word itself. Right. Before we head back into the movies, because we're hitting some good points, because just getting to the point to where all these different colors, specifically ruby, how it connects to each one of the movies, like with Logan's Run, when your palm turns ruby, it's time to croak. In the Battlestar,
Planet of the Apes.
Planet of the Apes. When the red ruby button is pressed, it ends.
Boom. Yep.
Yeah. In the Wizard of Oz, when the ruby slippers are clicked three times, it ends, meaning that she's brought back to her bed, and people think she's nuts. Right.
Yep. That's another story. We go off on that one another episode particular film. Yeah.
And then we would have to then include Napoleon's favorite Return to Oz. He likes to add in the where she's wheeled in and they're putting the headphones on her on the Return to Oz. If you've ever seen that, that's something else. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. If you take Chumash, so the idea of what's the power behind this place? You have the idea of the five books. So you have Genesis, which is the origin story, right? Guess what? In Genesis, within the word Genesis, you have seeings, S-E-E-I-N-G-S. So within a Genesis, you also have seeing. So within that word is also seeing. So you're seeing what is becoming, right?
So that Indian tribe is Chumash.
Chumash,
And MASH is called MASH. So there's obviously a link in there.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying. If you break that word up into chew mash, and then also mash is scam, is S-H-A-M is also, you know, interesting enough, hatch is in there, right?
It is, yeah.
Fascinating.
Absolutely fascinating.
So Exodus, if you take Exodus, you have douse in that word, douse. Right now, douse is interesting in that it can be like the idea of liberation. If you douse something that's burning, you douse it and it goes out. So you're taking heat away, or you're doing something, or you can take something, or even if it's something, you're dousing it and then you
to find water.
And you're dousing. So then it's the idea of liberation, or and within sailing, it's meaning to lower a sail. So if you're sailing on a boat, so you're dousing the sail. So that means that you're trying not to take, there's an effect that's happening that you don't want any part of. There's a wind that you don't need at the moment. So you douse your sail because you don't want that momentum. That's the idea of Exodus. You're moving, you're getting out, right? You're controlling your either descent or ascent, depending on how you're looking at it, by your sail. And, you know, that idea. Now, Leviticus, where it's up to the third, is the idea of like, now this is where most people get confused, because it's like to elicit. Within Leviticus is to elicit, to bring up. Now, this is not for the average so-called man who is living and just producing and being and not lying to their neighbor. This is for those that think that they're priestly or lawyers, because they're the ones who are going to go into this idea of eliciting thoughts or meaning from simple words. So these are the litigious folks as well. This is the book that causes or speaks about who becomes, in the modern day lingo, as lawyers.
Yeah.
You know, pains in the ass. All right. So then Numbers, isn't that interesting that the fourth book is called Numbers and people want to talk about Numbers as not meaning anything. Within Numbers, you can say submen, meaning subhuman.
Yeah.
Because by the numbers, that's also, it's stories of being in the wilderness or of challenge. That's what that book's about. All right. So then you have the idea of Deuteronomy. And there's a few interesting things in here. One, you have demon, which is obvious. You have moon eye. Moon eye is the idea of the dark eye, right? Or the evil eye. And Deuteronomy is the idea of the covenant. Now, the covenant is the idea of who do you covet? What do you covet? What power do you covet? What idea or truth do you covet? You know, what are you going to go to bat for?
Yeah.
You know, what's your thing, right? So then MASH goes into rebellion within a system while trying to highlight that those rebels can still be useful when called upon. And to say simply, it means that BJ and Honeycutt, and they can go sit in their tent in the swamp and be pains in the ass and break all the different rules. But when it came time for the job to be done, they could be counted on. Therefore, it was allowable that they break the rules, or that's allowable that they be rebels, because their work was such that, no, it's all horseshit. That's not how it works. Let me tell you what. That's not how that works. Yeah. So then what it does is it puts these false ideas out, though, to children or to anyone, really, because the child could be 40 years old. You know, a child could be 50 years old. It's where their mind's at, man. Most people have no original thought. So these people's minds then see this stuff and they think that's how it is. And that's not how it is. So it basically offers a false product too. And then that is the idea of false mind. Or remember, in like the Harry Potter movies or in the books, they have the pensive, which is the idea of memories that you could put into a container and you could pull out the pensive, you could pull out a memory. The idea of a seven, the idea. So then you're able to then relive this idea of this memory.
Yeah.
Right. Now the Chumash, which if you look at another word in there, you have chasm, which is the gap or an opening, right? Now the gap or the opening is the place where you can put something. It's a place. Remember in Planet of the Apes, how the apes found out where they were hiding was they said, oh, look, there's a gap. There's a crevice. Remember they went into the gap specifically to, so then the gaps that opening talked about, it's in Chumash, that same idea. And also is Muska. Now Muska is the idea, of a star name. All right. And it's named after a fly. However, it was named before after the bee, and it was named Apis, A-P-I-S. What's interesting about that is that what makes this interesting is that you'll notice that the bee, think of like a beehive, represents, if you look at the honeycomb shape, it's going to represent the inside of your hexagram, right?
That's right.
Now, what's interesting about your hexagram is that if you just look at it a certain way with your eyes and tell yourself, just break that into two triangles, you see that it's simply just two triangles and you pull it apart. And then now you have your 33 and you can put it back together. Now you see how the hexagon works. It's actually two triangles. You just put it right together. Once you see physically how that works and you do it in your imagination, you can pull apart any story because you now have access to that center beehive combo key. And that's what's interesting about what was when it was changed to fly, the same place, the same power. It was changed to fly because under B, it's giving you a positive idea of how to use the system. Under fly, its gematria changes to 43, all right, or 7, right? 4 plus 7. And that's also the idea, or is mark, or you have the mark of Cain, right?
Mark of the beast.
And guess what? Well, funny, Diablo is 43, all right? So then also you have the fly, which is Beelzebub, the Lord of the Flies, which if you're out there wanting to read the Bible, Mark 3:22, 3:22, 7.
We've heard that number before.
Take a look at that. Or Luke 11:15 for starters. There's several more that just go ahead and look it up. But that's a good start. And then that will give you that idea. But then you see, Rick, that there's the idea of the polarity change simply by changing what people will then be told that it's named after and by changing the name. But the light was not different. However, then so then that tells you the story of rebellion.
Yeah. Well, both those, all the movies that we've discussed are rebellion. And TV shows. So, yeah, you're 100% correct, as usual. 100% correct, as usual. Yeah, fascinating. Very interesting and it's you've got to – I'm glad I'm doing this bit by bit because no one can comprehend this stuff. Well, you put it together, but you need to do it bit by bit to get the – put the puzzle together and then and find out how to untangle the shapes, and as you just mentioned, take the hexagon and take the two triangles apart and you pull apart the story.
Right.
Excellent.
That's your 33. That's your entrance way. You got the key. Remember, you got the key because remember, if you take the Ankh idea, the Ankh is the reflection of the nut. because the nut is sometimes shown as draping her arms up and over, but there's going to be a cap. If you
The anchor's across with the loop on the top, isn't it?
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
So now imagine that ankh as the nut goddess, which is just reaching over almost all the way, but leaving a gap. And then once you rotate that in the mirror, that gap is filled with the mirrored image. That becomes the ankh. That becomes the encapsulated idea or the containment, the six.
Remember, the mirror of illusion.
Yeah, exactly.
The mirror of illusion.
Mm. Exactly. And exactly. You hold that up to yourself and say, mirror, mirror on the wall. So then if you look at that idea, so remember the key was used, and the key was even used by Francis. Francis 7. Remember he looked down and he saw it in the puddle and he picked it up. He's, oh, there it is. And then he used the key. Man, he chased him all the way. And then the little old man Satan character didn't lift a finger, didn't care. He let it all play out.
Yeah.
So I find that interesting that those movies all there, and even you have the battle for the Planet of the Apes filmed some of it there, and that was filmed in 70, or that was released in 73, and that dealt more with the idea of the fifth movie, and that dealt more with the idea of when the apes were fighting back with mankind again, which was
beneath the Planet of the Apes.
That was number two. That came out in 1970.
Okay.
Yeah, and then that was the one that I told you that had the ones that the characters would speak to them with their minds only.
These were massive movies too in the day. I've got to reiterate, as a child, you know, they were must see movies. Incredibly big. All the stuff we're talking about was big.
Yeah, and remember when they were worshiping the idea of the nuclear bomb, when they took off their masks.
Yeah.
And they had those little veiny faces, like D heads.
Yeah.
You know, and here's what's interesting about that is that even back then, that's life. It was representing the idea of life like masks that's being talked about today. That's obvious in some cases, because none of the characters, and in fact, I would say none of the audience to that point expected that.
Mm-mm.
Had you not seen it already.
Yeah.
And so I found that an interesting dynamic. And because there wasn't a lot of story to be told for those characters, so they kind of had to add something. And that was pretty good to add. It kind of gave a little bit more depth to the character, other than just a bunch of bunglers that at the end just drank some poison and off themselves. And do you remember that's kind of how they did? They off themselves basically, and then the monkeys came in, the gorillas specifically, because you notice with the Planet of the Apes, the gorillas were the army, the chimpanzees were like the general work class, and then the orangutans were the aristocrats, right?
Yeah, orange.
They were the aristocrats, and then the aristocrats. There is some craps, and then there was no crossing. There was no chimpanzee who is being, you know, brought under the wing of a gorilla to be a good. No, that wasn't happening. You notice that when the gorillas come into there with Dr. Zaius, because he's part of the So he goes in, and then. Remember the blonde, one of the blonde characters from the little tribunal that was putting the astronaut on trial had this long fake blonde hair. You already knew it was fake because you already saw it was a mask as the audience, but the monkey comes in and doesn't know, and he's playing with it, and you see this kind of, they play it off like there's some the desire there. It's kind of a strange scene, quite obvious. And then, so that, and then he has to be called off. So it's a specific scene. It's done for a reason. You know, it's not done for no reason. You know, so I found that interesting as well. Because a lot, like I say, most of these movies you can break down to, you could probably do them in 40 minutes, but there's a lot of filler, but.
Well, that's the fast forward button. Yeah, that's what, as you say, you know, a movie could be cut by three quarters in some cases.
Yeah, just to get to the point. So, yeah, so I think that that's
awesome, pretty cool, time. Man. Yeah, I'm impressed, as usual.
Yeah, so so we were basically looking at the idea of going to a place called Malibu Creek State Park, find out that
the 34th parallel.
Yeah, and found out that it's named that basically the people who were supposed to have been there first or native, the native people were the Chumash, meaning that the five books or the people of the law were the first people there. You see that that's just a sneaky way of saying that they were there first.
They named the show Mash as well. You know, so there's a big there with that for sure.
Absolutely. Oh, for sure.
Fascinating, Dave. Absolutely fascinating. I don't know where you want to go now. I mean, you've really done a big job on that region for sure.
Oh yeah, so that's just really kind of the area. And then even once you get outside of that area, you kind of have the Mulholland Drive, which starts there by where does it start down there?
David Lynch just happens to have done a very powerful film called Mulholland Drive as well. Another guy who's done some amazing stuff as well. We'll have to do a bit of a breakdown on some of the his shows as well. Eventually.
Oh yeah, I can go anywhere with that. That's fine.
Yeah, well, that'll be fascinating. We'll save it. Maybe next week we'll do David Lynch's incredible. I mean, really, there's a couple of shows just along, in his shows alone. Probably three shows you could do. What was the first show with Laura? You know, the
Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks, yeah, absolutely. So we do it. I would say do a Twin Peaks and then follow through to Mulholland Drive and other spin-offs.
Yeah, so Mulholland, yeah, that starts there in Leo Carrillo. I want to say it starts right off the PCH at Leo Carrillo Beach, and then it winds all the way up, and it crisscrosses, and I want to say it interjects with the 23 for a minute, then it keeps going. It winds up all the way up there by the Hollywood sign.
Well,
by the time it's all said and done. So if you were to drive from Leo Carrillo Beach on the PCH, it's called Pacific Coast Highway. It's Highway 1. But if you're in California, just ask, where's the PCH? That's all you need to know. And then say, okay, so you're going up the PCH. You get onto Mulholland. If you take that Joker all the way through, and it's going to be some sort of trip for you, you'll wind up at the Hollywood sign. Are very close to it.
Very interesting.
Yep. So that's a very interesting little trip. And that whole, just the roads, Canaan Road is the road that I used to take. In fact, I had a job. My first job after my paper out was I worked at 15. When I was 15 and a half, they hired me at Jack in the Box. And it was the last Jack in the Box on Canaan Road before you would, if you were going to Malibu Beach, or if you were going to Zuma Beach, you'd be coming through my drive-thru. It was a pretty good job for a high schooler.
Oh, man. So you had your driver's license, obviously, or were you riding a motorbike?
I had a little scooter. I had what was called an Elite 80. It was a little Honda. Yeah. One of those things where you kind of sit stupidly like you're sitting on a bench.
I know the ones.
That was my first one. Then I moved to I had a Honda XL 250, which was
The bike, man. Fantastic. Yeah. Great bike. Yep.
Because I used to ride all over in the dirt. We used to do different dirt bike riding because California is really when I first grew up, there was a lot of open area, a ton of it. So we used to do YZ80 runs. Back when two stroke, I really liked the two stroke.
YZ80s are incredibly fast for an 80cc, 33, 80cc, 33. Those bikes had what they called the power band or whatever. So you'd open it up and it'd boost Absolutely. Oh. Yeah. And there was the Suzuki RM, they had the power band, whatever that technology was, that bike went faster than what you were supposed to go on a little tiny bike. Incredible stuff.
Yeah, I used to do a few tricks. I'd never do them if somebody's riding behind me, but I used to like to, when I was coming up a berm, if I was coming up a berm, I'd go ahead and bounce the pegs, and then I'd make the back tire bite, bounce, bite.
Oh, no,
and just bring it around, and then I'd shoot off into the straightaway. It would allow me to get a little extra speed. I like to do little tricks, but the reason I didn't do it if somebody's behind me is because you might kick up something right into their grill, you know?
In their face.
so I didn't want to do that. That would be uncool.
We had similar childhoods. We were teenhoods because those bikes were part of my growing up and zooming around and having some great fun. Dangerous, but no one got killed.
I had the XL, and then that was it. Well, actually, I left because I went into the Navy when I was 17. Like the day I was turned 17, I went in. So I only had the XL for about a year because I had the Elite 80. For 6 months or so. Yeah, for the time I worked at the Jack in the Box. And then I moved to Vaughn's, which is a market, which is kind of like a supermarket. I moved to Vaughn's, and I even went to bagging college for 2 days.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I went down to L.A. Well, in-town L.A., they sent me down to a Vaughn's in L.A. And so and it was right next to the Anheuser-Busch factory, which makes beer at the time.
Right.
But they also had an amusement park there, which was pretty cool. Which they had a awesome beer garden and an amusement park. They've gotten rid of it, but back when I was a kid, that was the place to be. That was fun. Between Knott's Berry Farm, Disneyland, and Busch Gardens. Maybe we'll do something
especially Knott's Berry Farm. Knott's Berry Farm, fascinating.
Knott's Berry Farm is cool. So then I went to bagging college for 2 days. And then that's why I'm an expert. I tell you what, paper or plastic, because at the time when I first started, it was only paper. We only had paper sacks. Then they started to have a choice. So then you ask them the choice. You put the frozen into the one, boom, boom, boom. You make sure they're square. You pop them in their cart. If they need help, you walk them out. Oh, yeah, I was good at that. It's great. It's working in a market's great because, I mean, you go on a break, you get hungry. There's plenty of stuff to choose from.
And you get free food. Why not?
So especially when they slightly burn the cookies, they give those away.
Well, and they taste just as good, let me just tell you.
Oh, absolutely. I would always eat them. I'd be like, I'll take a few. For sure, I'll take a few.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. So I think we're pretty good. So next week we'll head up Mulholland. We can kind of work backwards because you have Mulholland is like, I guess he did that in 2001, huh? We can do his other thing too, Twin Peaks. Well, Twin Peaks goes into a bunch of different stuff. Twin Peaks goes into all kinds of different, as you know, it's all biblically referenced, but I'll get into it. And a lot of it's dreams. A lot of it's dreams that people don't realize that a lot of what you're looking at is dream sequence.
Illusion. It's all illusions. And you got to know what you're looking at. But yeah, no, we'll do that. That's I would say very importantly, because there's so much in it, maybe one series at a time and mix it up with something else, because it's very convoluted, but some incredible stuff. David Lynch is a very clever fellow, I would have to say that, because he's done some quite interesting films. The normie type person would enjoy it as well, but if you've got an esoteric bent to your brain and you can see the behind the scenes and the illusions that you're being presented, and how to take them. So it's fascinating. Well, I don't know what you want to do, Dave. You want to talk about some, have you picked up any interesting smokes in the last 7 days since I've spoke to you?
I have. Yeah. Actually, I just picked up one called Jelly Runts. Now, how do you, this
jelly runts.
Yeah, R-U-N-T-Z. So like jelly, almost like, you know, jam or jelly, and jelly runts. So it's
nice.
I had a nice big toke of it earlier. It gives you a little bit of dry mouth, slightly. So you definitely have to have your sweet tea ready. And usually that means that it's going to be more on the happier. Like, it makes you talkative for sure. Because the reason you get dry mouth is because you're running your mouth too much. You know, take a break, sport. That's what it's telling you. It's trying to tell you you're running your mouth too much, sport. So, it's saying that it is a cross from white runts to jelly. The thing is, they got these things so screwed up now that it smells to me what used to be called gelato. All right. That's what it smells like. It used to be called gelato, but these people have the name so messed up nowadays that it's hard to talk to you about like what, kind of like the original strain names with the newer stuff because they're so far removed. So I kind of sometimes will say, if this is white runts, it smells like gelato to me, and it is quite frosty. Now, frosty is when you have a lot of the THC crystals on the end of the bud, and it looks very, lots of bling to it, you know, lots of bouncy bling to it. And also when you look under the scope, and that's what you need to look at. That's the medicine you're burning. And that's actually what you're ingesting that gives you the effect.
Shape of the crystals, Dave?
Oh, they look like a ball with a one on them, like a one with a ball sitting on top. They're called trichomes, by the way. Trichomes. Isn't that interesting? Three.
Okay, yeah.
So
yeah.
Then let me tell you, just so since we brought it up, the trichome, this is my rule of thumb, is that if I take my sight glass, which you can get off the internet for a few bucks with a little magnifying light, just put it on the bottom of your bud if you're growing, put it on the bottom of your bud, and if about 40% of your field of view without moving the scope where your trichomes are amber color, kind of the same color as Jurassic Park when they had the mosquito in it. Remember that color?
So amber, yeah.
So when you see that color, that's when it's time to cut it down. Because if your trichomes are still standing straight up with the ball on top, they're still young. Obviously, if you get the idea. Once they start to droop over and they start to become like they're at 90 degrees or almost look like a seven shape, guess what? It's time to chop it down.
Excellent.
Yeah. So that's specific. And you notice how even in the so-called physical space, those same ideas are shown. The seven, even in the shape of the trichome, it's going to present itself in the shape of what's going to happen, the seven or the Zion or the mind, what's going to be affected. Do you see?
Oh, it's just everywhere, isn't it? These numbers.
Yeah. Well, it's just if you know that the system's not going to change, and you recognize what builds the system and how to recognize the parts, you can't not see it. You have to see it. So then you're like, okay, that's the same. It's just like taking that hexagram apart. Once you know how to pull the puzzle apart and you can see once you know the trick, it's no longer tricky to you. You're like, oh, here you do it. Boom, boom, boom. Here's how you do it. So you've already broken the system. Now you just need to start to manipulate it. You manipulate the system and you show people, hey, if I show you this, and this result happens, then go ahead and take a look at what I've told you and test it to see if it's true. All right? Because I've told you before that a person will not come to their senses unless they, one, get called by my Lord Jesus Christ. That's not out of my hands. But two, that they listen and that they actually answer the door. They've got to answer to the knock, because if they just refuse and they just continue to think that they've got it all figured out, then they'll continue to be in the dark and seeing things darkly. They'll kind of know things aren't right, but they won't know why. I know because I was there. You can see clearly. You can know. All right.
Yeah.
There's a Mark Wahlberg movie. What is he in? Where he plays like a time traveler of sorts. And it came out. Let me tell you the story why I figure out the name. But he plays a character that forgot his past. All right. So then they're trying to get him to remember who he was, and he had to be. So they're and he's protecting this egg, and this egg, if activated, will end the world. All right. So you have these two sides. It's like good and evil. Let's just call them. They call them. Is it Invincibles? No. Shoot, I don't like when I can't remember the name of something, but it's Anyways, they continue through each life and each life. Some of them can remember who they were before, like specifically.
Is it infinite?
It might be infinite. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Infinite. Yeah. Okay. So then they'll remember. They'll remember who they were. What's happened with the Wahlberg characters? He doesn't remember who he is.
Yeah.
Right. And then what happens is they have to then go through these procedures to have him remember who he is, blah, blah, blah. And I guess what the point of that whole story is.
A man discovers that his hallucinations are actually visions from past lives.
Yeah. So then
2021.
If you watch that, the scene where he's trying to be convinced or where he's trying to have his memory jogged, every time he says he doesn't know, the guy pulls a trigger on a gun. So, see, I don't know is not the answer. And wait till you see that scene. So that,
we brought this I don't know up back in the very early episodes of Bong Conversations. I think the episode one, I do believe. I think I don't know was part of the takeaway of that show.
Yeah, it's basically a mantra that you convince yourself of a mind state. It's like if you can't know, then how will your mind, your so-called subconscious, ever be relaxed on a truth or a foundation? Because you've told yourself and you convinced yourself that you don't know. You've literally fooled yourself. You bewitched yourself. And that's and that's why in the scripture Paul asks, who bewitched you? You know, it's like, who bewitched you? You walk into a town and these people are talking crazy about, you know, they don't know this and they don't know that. It's like, who bewitched you? How did you think that you're here and that you have no ability to know? What is wrong with you? You know?
Exactly.
And that's the idea. That's the idea of becoming the man. Also, you know, so yeah, I did want to say that the idea of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid was also filmed partially in that Malibu Creek State Park. And we talked about that in one of the early episodes.
We did. Yeah. And you can see, like, when you started going through all the shows that you said were filmed there, I was going, yeah, it's very similar, you know, same locations. You know, because often the whole film industry is an illusion for sure. Right. You know, and I spend an awful lot of time on, say, Dark City and Matrix movies alone. I roamed around the sets and things like that. And you'd find the interesting thing is that Dark City sets were used on the Matrix sets. The film was filmed exactly before as soon as they wound up the Dark City, the Matrix started. And all of the sets of that were reused for the Matrix. So Dark City, they're a lot more closer than you would imagine. I can kind of see, as you did, I guess there's a bit of a link between me and you. You grew up around these areas where you could see this is an illusion, that this is, there wasn't really planets, there wasn't really apes roaming around here. And 30 years ago, I was saying the same thing, though. That's from that film. That's from that film. They're not real. There's a lesson to be learned in that film. So yeah, fascinating, man. And good stuff, Dave, as usual. I think we'll probably wind it up now because I think we've knocked out probably more.
For sure.
As per usual, as again, once again, I've sat here listening to you and, you know, going, wow, this is good stuff. No one has done any of this stuff before, Dave. And if they have, I haven't heard it. I'd like someone to point me to a direction of someone that's broken down these shows and bring in links. The Chew Mash and Mash, the Rubies, right. And, the three movies and TV shows we talked about with the Ruby in it. Fascinating, fascinating, fascinating. And I think, on this wonderful, beautiful Sunday, and I think you'd probably be getting into the 3:11 yourself or 11:3 now, but getting a bit late over there.
I'm still a little ways away.
Okay, man. Well, that's fantastic. Well,
I'm still traveling on the backside.
I'm going to end the show when I'll send it to Joel from the Truth. We're on truthmeats.com. The full print, the full finished article is truthmeats.com,
right,
where you can find all these shows. Dave will put it out on YouTube, which has got, we can't put music on either of the, on any platform because it gets stopped. So if you want to listen to the final result, it's truthmeats.com. Go into the site and you'll find the finished product, the product. Thanks to Joel, the wonderful producer in the background, back in the ether out there somewhere. So I'm going to end with a song, The Mirror of Illusion, which is a fantastic song by Hawkwind from 72 or 73. But if you listen to the lyrics, there's a whole lot of stuff that Dave's kind of knocked out tonight is in those lyrics. So The Mirror of Illusion, Dave, you want to send the bot out? And
I will.
We'll have a little chin wag up.
In the corporate mask of so wide. The house, how tiny it is from inside. A box of yours still living in, I cannot see for why. You think you've found perception of the you